Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled Taxes, What Your Business Needs to Know. Every company owner fully understands it's not how much money you make, it's how much you get to keep. That's where tax planning becomes really important. Tom, isn't that what this presentation is all about?
It sure is, Bill. This month's presenter will cover everything from how the company is structured to exit strategies and most everything else in between. It includes annual tax planning strategies, specific tax deductions, and even mentions some of the current tax changes that are before Congress right now.
Well, there's no question for our listeners, you are really going to get a lot of value out of this presentation. Brian Collar has been a CPA, CCIFP, and a partner with the Breams Group for the past 23 years. He has extensive experience in public accounting serving privately owned businesses with a focus on the construction industry, along with manufacturing, transportation, service, retail, and other industries. Brian focuses on delivering advisory and compliance services to his clients, as well as training and developing their professional staff. He has assisted clients with plans for growth, acquisitions, succession, and ownership transitions, as well as developing and improving internal reporting, forecasting, and cash flows. And now, with taxes, what your business needs to know, here is Brian Collar with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Hello, my name is Brian Collar. I'm a CPA with the Breams Group. We are a local CPA firm with offices in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Coralville, Iowa. I'm in our Cedar Rapids office and happy today to be speaking with you about taxes for small businesses. As I mentioned, we'll be talking about taxes today. Two of the biggest things that you can do is planning, preparing. And while we're planning and preparing for them, we are many times trying to minimize or defer the taxes. Many times folks would like to eliminate the taxes completely, which sometimes you can do, sometimes you can't. The majority of the time what we're doing is trying to utilize the tax law to make the tax impact as small as possible. But also the more common thing that happens during planning is deferring taxes, pushing the taxes down the road as far as we can so we can utilize the cash currently to recapitalize the business, to reinvest in the business, and to grow the business, and to use that money down the road to pay the taxes. So today, what we're going to be talking about specifically is entity structure, how the entity itself impacts how you're taxed and how that flows through, accounting methods, different accounting methods that can be utilized to maximize your benefit of taxes, annual planning strategies, and then also the last thing we'll talk about is exit strategies. What that means is once you've done all you're going to do in the company and you're looking to move out and what's the best strategy in order to do that and exit the company and get the value from it that you've created. So entity structure. Most common types we see are S corporations, LLCs, and C corporations. An LLC can actually be taxed in different methods. An LLC can be taxed as an S corporation, can be taxed as a C corporation, and it can also be taxed as a partnership. How the entity is set up initially does depend on how it's taxed, but then there's also elections that can be made throughout the life of your business if you do want to change how you are taxed. S corporations and LLCs that are taxed as S corporations or partnerships, those entities are what called flow-through entities, and the income from the business itself passes through to the individual, and the income from the business is taxed on the individual's personal income tax return. So the company itself typically does not pay corporate tax. However, there are instances where the company might have to pay corporate tax. I'm not going to get into that level of detail today, but just know that it's most of the time in the tax law, it's the majority of the time, but there's always exceptions in the tax law. So the S corporation and the LLC tax is an S corporation or a partnership. And I should also mention an LLC can also be what's called a disregarded entity. And what that means is if there is only one owner of the LLC, it's considered a, what's called a single member LLC. And that entity itself does not have to file a separate tax return. So it can just be reported directly. The income and expenses are reported directly on the owner's tax return on what's called a Schedule C. So a sole proprietorship is considered the tax the same way as a single member LLC. Advantages of that obviously are avoiding the extra cost of preparing a separate tax return. But then there also are downsides, which I'll talk about a little bit later here. But so the S-corps and the partnerships and LLCs, the pass-through entities, again, you calculate the income at the corporate or the business level, the entity level, and then that flows through to the individual and gets combined with all the income on the individual, the personal tax return, whether it be wages, interest and dividends, other investments you have, other pass-through entities, other rental entities, all of that income comes together, capital gains, and gets pulled through to the personal tax return and taxed all at once. So a lot of times people try to understand, well, what is the impact of having the company income flow through to me on my personal tax return? And it's, of course, easier said than done. Because the income does come through and it will increase, obviously, your income thresholds, which will sometimes phase you out of certain credits, phase you out of certain deductions. But the overall impact of being able to pass through that income, the nice part about that is you can then take distributions of that income, and that part's not taxable. So the income itself is taxable, but most of the time, as long as you have what's called basis in the entity, you can take distributions from the company in order to pay those taxes. And also, you know, if additional cash flow is available, you can take distributions, and those are not taxable to you. Alternatively, in a C corporation, that is where the entity itself is taxed. So the tax is paid in the corporate at the corporate level. Currently, the income tax rate is 21% in a C corporation. The highest rate for an individual currently is 37%. However, so you might say, well, why would anybody want to be an S corporation or pass-through entity and have your income tax at that higher rate? The downside, the significant downside of the C corporation is getting that money again out of the corporation and to the owner and the shareholders. When it comes out, it's a dividend that's taxable. It's a taxable dividend, similar to any dividends that you might receive from investing in public companies. Those dividends are taxed the same when they come from a private company. So you're paying the tax at the corporate level at the 21%, but then you're also paying tax when those profits are distributed out to the owners. So again, now you're paying at the 23%, whatever the rate is for the dividend. Most of the time it can be considered a qualified dividend, so you get the lower rates on it, which is good, but now you're still paying, you've paid it once inside and you're paying it twice to get it out. So that's double taxation is the term you'll hear quite frequently. So on a year over year basis, you may be actually paying more tax, but when you look at it over a long-term strategy, the pass-through entities are really going to save you the most money, especially as you get to when we start talking about exit strategies, because when you sell an entity or you sell your company, majority of times you're going to want to, or the buyer is going to want to buy the assets in the company. And so, again, we'll talk about it when we get to exit strategies, but You'll pay tax on the sale of those assets once inside the C corporation and then also a second time to pass it out. So that's where the significant impact can be on the C corporation. So most of the time we are going to recommend a pass-through entity for somebody setting up a new business or starting a small business versus the C corporation. There are, again, like I mentioned earlier, the tax law does Nothing is ever 100%, so there are certain times where it does make sense to be a C corporation, certain things you'd want to be a C corporation. Another thing to consider as you're considering your entity structure, and this is, would be from the very start, an S corporation does have limited shareholders. So you can only have a certain amount of shareholders, and only certain entities or people can be shareholders. So you can't have a C corporation own an S corporation, and you also cannot have another S corporation own an S corporation less than 100%. So it's got to be 100% wholly owned as an S corporation. The LLC, however, does provide a little bit more flexibility as far as who can be owners of the partnership if it's taxed as a partnership from that standpoint. I already mentioned tax rates a bit. So really the biggest impact on those are the individual rates versus the corporate rates. An LLC, a single member LLC, and a partnership have the potential, if you're materially participating, so if you're the owner of the business, working in the business, and you've got income passing through, then that income is also subject to self-employment tax. So a lot of times people will ask about the self-employment tax and should I be an S corporation instead of a partnership or a single member LLC? And really, again, it depends on the volume that you're doing, the profits that you're going to have, because you are still going to have to pay yourself a wage in an S corporation. And so there is no complete avoidance of the self-employment tax. So in an S corporation, you will need to pay yourself wages. And so you'll have, if you have no other employees, and then obviously you'd be the only one on there, but you would need to pay yourself a commensurate rate wage as far as the work you're doing. And so therefore you would have payroll taxes included on that. So you need to get to a certain level of profit in LLC where you're paying a certain amount of self-employment tax before it really becomes a benefit to add the additional cost. Again, if you're a single member LLC not filing tax return, add the additional costs of an initial tax filing. And then also to track the wages. Again, if you're a sole proprietor, then if you don't have any other wages, then you'd have to start to, you'd consider, do I need additional filings for payroll taxes and those types of things. So consult your tax advisor. Obviously, these are kind of just general things that you'll want to think about or questions to bring to your advisor as you're discussing that. So those are the important items on that. Accounting methods. The next item we'll touch on is accounting methods. Now, accounting methods can be, there are many multiple, there are multiple methods of accounting that can be utilized on a tax return. The tax return accounting method does not necessarily have to be the same as how you record your books. So if you're preparing financial statements underneath GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles required by the bank, required by your bonding company, then you obviously that's what you need to do for your internal books. Now for taxes, we can elect to have a different method. So it's not, a lot of people think, well, I can't have two different sets of books. So you're not really keeping two separate types of books, but we're making adjustments to your books in order to get it to the tax accounting method. And in doing so, you can take advantage of some opportunities in the tax code in order to, as we mentioned early on, defer or minimize or take advantage of those tax laws in order to do that most effectively. Accrual basis is, again, if you're recording your income and booking payables as they come in and receivables, and your GAAP reporting is going to be on the accrual basis. Now, small entities are allowed to record their tax income on the cash basis, which means you do not have to pay tax on your receivables until you collect them as cash. On the flip side, you can't deduct any of your expenses until you pay for them. And so there are limitations as far as what companies are allowed to utilize the cash method. So eligible small businesses, you have to have less than $26 million over a three-year period. Once you get over that threshold, once your average gross receipts on your tax return exceed $26 million for that three-year period, then you are no longer eligible for the cash basis, and you have to switch to accrual basis accounting. It's a simple process to do. So if you're starting in on your business, you want to be cash basis, but you're concerned that at some point in time, hey, I do want to grow this thing, and I want to be above $26 million in revenue. It's a form that's filed. You actually can, if it creates income for you, you can spread that change over a four-year period and not have to take the hit all in 1 year. But if you are getting close to that point where you're over the $26 million and you are on the cash basis, then you want to start planning for that and understanding what that impact is going to be as far as additional taxable income. Because as we're going to talk about, the cash basis is really it's a deferral method of pushing off the tax until the cash is in hand. There are certain accounting methods with regards to inventories and materials and supplies. If you have de minimis amounts of those things, you don't have to track them in inventory if you don't track them for your books, and therefore you can expense them off as you go. I would recommend if you have high volumes of inventory and you're tracking them in the warehouse, I would not recommend just expensing them off as you go, because it's this method in particular, you do have to follow it on your books and for the tax return. And so I generally recommend to people that it's going to be more beneficial for you to track your inventories, to understand what your inventories are, versus trying to utilize an expensing method in particular situations for that. Again, everybody's situation is a little bit different. I'm just kind of bringing up some items that you can take a look at and see if the opportunities are available to you. I know I'm talking to contractors, and so completed contract is also an accounting method that can be utilized. The completed contract method applies to your long-term contracts. And so a contractor can have multiple accounting methods. So you've got what's called your overall accounting method, which is going to be typically your accrual or your cash basis. But then you've also got your method for accounting for long-term contracts. Now, in the tax code, a long-term contract is a contract that you start in one tax year and finish in another tax year. So if you started a project on December 31st of 2021 and you finished it on January 2nd of 2022, in the tax code, that's considered a long-term contract. An eligible small business is allowed to utilize completed contract method, which states that you would not recognize any profit or losses on it until the job is complete. Now, definition of complete is you've got basically 95% of your costs in, and the project is available to the owner for use. And so, if you got nothing left to do except for punch list items, and the owner has occupancy, if you're building a building, then that's considered complete. So it's not, you don't get to just decide when I'm done, when I'm not done, or if I got a couple punch list items I got to take care of. So the tax code does pretty clearly define as far as when a contract is actually considered complete. So once that contract is considered complete, that's when the profit is recorded and recognized on the tax return as taxable income. So all the expenses are deferred, and all the receipts and payments that you've received are deferred until it's done. And then at that point in time, you recognize the profit. Now, that part's nice because you get to defer it as long as the project goes on, and you don't have to recognize profit until that point in time. The other accounting method, again, I've touched on a little bit, is cash basis method. So a cash basis can be a really powerful way to defer taxable income into the future, especially if you've got a lot of volume, a lot of receivables and on your books, and your payables are smaller. So really the cash basis method becomes very beneficial at the point in time where you've got a large spread between receivables you're collecting, you're waiting to collect on, and your payables that have gone out the door. So if you're now, if you got a lot of subs and you don't pay your subs until you collect on your receivables, maybe that benefit isn't as much because we're our spread between our receivables and our payables is not that much, and so the expenses we're not deferring, expenses we're not deducting, are not as beneficial as the revenue we're not recognizing for not collecting on the receivables. Okay, so now we have an example of the cash basis method and how it can be utilized to defer income, but also to point out a trap that can sneak up on you. So the cash basis, as I mentioned before, it's a great way to defer income, but you also have a deferred tax liability as you're doing this along the way. So that's something I always make sure to have a discussion with my clients every year when we look at tax planning one and when we're looking at the tax return at the end, when we put it all together, just to keep in mind of the deferred tax liability that's out there and coming down the road. So we'll continue to push things off, but at some point in time, it does catch up to you. And as I'll kind of explain in the example here, taxable income when it decreases when you have a downturn in your business and things go downhill, then that's when taxable income actually increases. So it can sneak up on you. You're going through your year, thinking you're having a bad year, and then all of a sudden, I got this tax liability. So that's why it's so important to keep that top of mind as you plan and as you strategize down the road. So as we have our example here, so I've got year one. I've got a company with $2 million in revenue, $1.5 million in expenses. So on our books, on our method to keeping track of the books, accrual method, we have $500,000 of income on our books. So we have a nice little profit there. But then we get to the tax return at the end of the year. So a lot of that income we build right at the end of the year, got some projects taken care of or to the point where we could bill them out. So I'm sitting on $1 million in accounts receivable. In the prior year, the amount of receivables that I deferred, so now I've got to pick that up this year. So current year receivables I have not collected, I can defer that amount. But then the $400,000 that I deferred last year, now I've got to pick that up this year as income. Now I've got $150,000 in accounts payable that I haven't paid cash out yet. So again, when you're doing your year-end planning, the strategy obviously is to pay as much of your payables down as you can to take those expenses in the current year. So paid our expenses down, and so our accounts payables is a pretty low number at the end of the year, but we got to add back the $150,000. Last year we had $50,000 that we had to add back, and so at the end of the day we've deferred, so we back off all these things, and so our book income becomes zero taxable income, which is great. So everybody's happy that way. The bank is happy, with the bonding company's happy, we're showing profit. But we also don't have to pay any income tax, and so the taxable income is zero. So the income deferral here, so this is the deferred tax liability that I spoke about. So what we're deferring is really, so it's the $1 million of accounts receivable minus our accounts payable. So the net of those two, that's what we're deferring this year. So we're pushing income of $1 million out, but we're also pushing out $150,000 of expenses that we can't deduct yet. So we're rolling into year two with an income deferral of $850,000. Year two is a great year. Things really picked up, things increased. So our revenues bumped up to $3.5 million. And we were able to hold costs pretty well and increased our income to $1,050,000. Now at the end of the year, again, we had quite a few billings at the end of the year, so we had things sitting in accounts receivable we hadn't collected yet. We don't have to pick that up as income. So we're deferring now the $2.1 million, but now we're picking up the $1 million we deferred last year because we collected that, hopefully. And our current accounts payable is $250,000, so we're pushing that back. We can't deduct that yet, but now we've paid all those payables from last year, so we get to deduct that. So wow, that's great. We've got $1,050,000 of income on our books that we're showing to all our stakeholders. But now, hey, we're down to $50,000 of taxable income. That's manageable. We're not paying as much tax on that profit. So again, we're pushing that down the road with it. So at this point in time now, our deferral, our income deferral, that deferred tax liability is based off of is $1,850,000. Again, the difference between the receivables we haven't paid tax on and the payables we haven't deducted. So now here's the trap that I mentioned. So we roll into year three and things really, really took a dive. Things went downhill. The revenues weren't there. We didn't have the sales. We're able to hold our costs in just, you know, a rough year. Really dug in and got to break even. Felt pretty good about that. Thought, okay, well, we made it through, survived it. You know, tough year, break even, but we should be okay on taxes. But now we've got that deferral that's going to come hit us, because you can see obviously if our year was down, our receivables are going to be down, so we're only going to defer $750,000. But we collected the $2.1 million from the year before, so we get a deducted $250,000 here. So long story short, our zero profit on the books becomes $1.2 million of taxable income, because now our deferral is down to that $650,000. So now, if we didn't plan for this and didn't weren't aware that this was coming down the pipe, this $2.1 million that we collected here may have gone out the door, been expended, or been used for something else. But hopefully we kept in mind the fact that we're going to have some taxes due, so we've set aside some of this and prepared for the tax that's coming due on that $1.2 million, even though our profit was down. So again, just an example, what I like to talk about is as things progress on the cash basis. Next item we'll talk about is annual planning, and hit on a little bit with our cash basis method there, but the biggest thing we typically do is we'll want to minimize taxes or defer taxes. And the reason we want to do that is we want to be able to utilize our capital sooner than later. Instead of paying the taxes in, I want to utilize the capital that I've generated from my profits, reinvest it back in the business, whether it be buying additional equipment that it can make me more profitable, whether that be paying down debt to make me more limber and when times go down to reduce my leverage ratio. Regardless of what it is, we can put that capital to better use than pay it in taxes. And so that's why, even though sometimes we can't completely eliminate or avoid it, credits are the way to completely long-term and permanently reduce. A lot of these other items are just deferring it out. I'm not going to talk a lot about credits right now in this presentation, but there are certainly credits available, specifically in the construction industry, that you can take a look at. Especially if you're a home builder, there's the energy efficiency credits. Depending on what type of contract you are, the research and development credit sometimes can be an opportunity. It's not very prevalent in construction, but it certainly can be utilized effectively in certain trades. So that's all I'm going to say, I guess, on the tax credit. So what we're talking about right now is really kind of the minimization and deferral of taxes. One thing to keep in mind as we are looking at, again, whether it be cash basis or expenses that we're looking at, is the business loss limitation. So there are limitations on losses if you create a loss in your business. Again, if you're a pass-through entity and it's flowing through to you as an individual, there are limitations as far as what losses you can deduct. Now, there is also an additional deduction that you can take. Now, I mentioned previously the tax rates for the individuals are higher than they are in the C corporation, the 37% versus the 21%. There is a deduction, however, that is intended to, and certainly does, bring those rates closer together. That's called the qualified business income deduction. And so what that is if you've got income flowing through from a pass-through entity to your personal tax return, Most of the time, you're able to take a 20% deduction on your personal tax return. So essentially reducing your business income by 20% that you pay tax on. So you're only paying tax on essentially 80%. Now, again, there are limitations on that a lot of times, but most of the time you're able to kind of shave that top 20% of income off the top. So that does get you a lot closer to the C corporation rate. So again, just another reason that the pass-through entities typically are the way to go with regards to that selection. Depreciation is one of the biggest things that we have available to us in order to utilize advantages for reducing taxable income. So depreciation. I'm sure a lot of you are aware of the bonus depreciation that we've had for many, many years available to us. So essentially any piece of equipment. So depreciable property is any equipment that's purchased that is considered to be a long-term asset, construction equipment, office furniture, obviously any of those types of things is what we're talking about. There are also land improvements, so in parking lots and those types of things we can take bonus depreciation on. And so essentially something that you would typically have to capitalize and depreciate over a period of time, we're able to take that as a 100% deduction in the first year. A really big advantage for us to defer those taxes and push them down the road. Now, bonus depreciation is going to start phasing out in 2023. So you can see in the table here, we still have bonus depreciation for 2022, 100% bonus. That is the last year, however, that we will be able to utilize 100%. Again, if the tax law doesn't change, there's been obviously lots of talk about tax laws changing. I guess now is as good a time as any to speak on that. So the proposals we've seen are they've kind of stalled. So what we're talking about today is the tax laws as we know it. As Congress discusses it more and more, potentially there could be an increase to taxes. Capital gain rates is one specifically that they focus on and talked about, but potentially losing some other deductions and things are out there. But as it sits right now, there really isn't any anything that's close to getting signed and implemented. So we're just talking through right now, operating with the laws that we know. And so as it sits right now, bonus depreciation will start phasing out in 2023, 80% bonus in 23, and then 20% reductions there year after that. Now, however, we still do have Section 179 expense available, which is, it's very similar to bonus depreciation. You are able to expense in the first year the cost of equipment that's purchased. There's more limitations on Section 179. Bonus depreciation can actually create a loss, a taxable loss in a year. Section 179 is limited to taxable income. So now included in that is any officer wages. So if you are an S corporation and you're paying yourself wages, you can include that in your taxable income calculation as far as how much Section 179 you can take. So essentially you can take Section 179, which again expenses that equipment up to the amount of your taxable income plus off the wages paid to yourself, to officers of the corporation, to the shareholders. So one thing that we talk about quite frequently with our clients as well is cash flow versus reducing tax. So a lot of times people's sole narrative is, hey, how do I just not pay any tax? I don't want to pay any tax. And so what can we do to completely eliminate the tax? Well, a lot of times what that is the conversations we're having are, what should I go buy, or how much should I go buy at the end of the year? What piece of equipment should I get? What do I need to do to get rid of all my tax? And there is that temptation there to go buy something that will eliminate your tax. But the question I always pose to my clients is will that piece of equipment, will that purchase that you're looking to make actually make you more money? Will it make you more profitable? Will it make your operations more efficient? And will the business and will the company, will your employees benefit from purchasing this equipment? If that's the case, then yes, let's do the analysis and see what the impact on the tax will be. If that's not the case, if the sole purpose of buying a new large piece of equipment at the end of the year is strictly for a tax deduction, I would recommend against that highly. And here's an example as to why I would say that. So we've got a company here, a situation where we've got $100,000 in net income. If I want to go out and buy a piece of equipment for $100,000, eliminate my taxable income. So if you don't do that, then you pay, let's say, tax rate of 40%. So you pay tax of $40,000. I'm $40,000 out. But on the flip side, I say, hey, okay, I'm going to go buy this piece of equipment, get my taxable income down to zero. I don't pay any tax, but I'm, cash flow out the door is $100,000. If I didn't need that piece of equipment, if I'm essentially just replacing something that was working just fine, and I just got something newer, or I added something to my fleet that I didn't necessarily even really need at the moment in time. So now I'm not generating any additional income or any additional profit with this piece of equipment, but I spent $100,000 in order to save $40,000. It even makes it worse if you're taking on debt and you don't have the cash to pay that out with it. So now you're leveraged more by that $100,000 that you had to go out and finance in order to get that, in order to avoid those taxes. So sometimes, yep, it's the right decision to do, but I always like to caution people like, hey, let's take a look at this from our long-term strategy and not just, I don't want to pay any tax this year. So how do I eliminate that? So again, it's just having those conversations with your tax advisors and say, hey, what's the long-term strategy here, and not necessarily just the eliminate tax at all costs, regardless. Some other items we've talked about. So for 2021 and 22, so again, in 2022, meals are 100% deductible. That was implemented in one of the CARES Acts, but with one of the COVID laws to basically kind of help the restaurant industry come back. So typically meals are 50% deductible if they're business use. Obviously they got to be for business use, but in 2022, so this year, those meals are 100% deductible. Now, in entertainment expenses are still non-deductible, but the meals are 100% deductible. One of the other things that, again, we talked about, hey, how do I eliminate tax? But sometimes payable tax is in the short term is better in the long term as well. So when I mentioned optimizing tax brackets here and utilizing the standard deduction, what I mean by that is not using those depreciation deductions, for instance, to drive your taxable income all the way down to zero and avoid all tax. But now what we've done is, again, this is a permanent loss is what it is. So if we drive everything down, we don't utilize the standard deduction. So now I've got, if you're married, $25,000 deduction that the government gives me on an annual basis that I didn't utilize this year. So that means a year down the road where I've got income, where I maybe could have used or had some of that income in the current year in 2022, here as we look at 2022, I could have saved back some of those deductions, or you saved some of those deductions for down the road, and utilized the standard deduction versus just driving everything down with the depreciation with all the equipment I bought. Same thing goes for the tax bracket. So the tax brackets are, they're a graduated rate. So as we take a look at, maybe it makes sense for us to have $50,000 to $80,000 of taxable income this year to utilize, pay some tax this year because we're going to utilize those lower rates versus pushing it all down the road. And now I tack on, I had $100,000 I could have paid tax on this year, maybe utilizing those lower rates. Now, two or three years down the road, when I I have to pay tax on that income. Now I'm tacking that $100,000 on top of the highest rate. And so now I've got that spread of, you know, 20% that I could have saved. So again, a permanent tax savings is what that is. So I say all that, again, just kind of coming back to the long-term planning and strategy. The employee retention credit, that's an item that's out there. I think most people probably kind of reviewed that, looked at that, see if they are eligible for that. Essentially what that was if you retained employees and your revenues were down, there's a payroll tax credit you can go back and get or utilize in 2021 if you use that. If your revenues were down, then, you know, talk with your tax advisor, see if you've got an eligibility for that tax credit. Retirement plans and profit sharing plans, those are great tools to utilize in order to take deductions. And if you've got them structured correctly, the owners get a really nice deferral and to be able to put into their retirement account. And it's good for, I mean, a lot of times in the construction industry, we have low participation retirement plans, which limits what the owners can put into their plans. So, you know, having a good advisor on that front to be able to come out and educate the people and tell them the importance of putting the money away is a good idea as well, too. So, again, those items can help you take current deduction and then pay tax down the road when you take them on retirement. So a great item there. You know, the other thing I always talk about is documentation. So, you know, when you're preparing your taxes, your tax advisor doesn't necessarily need to audit your records and make sure everything you say, you know, all your expenses have receipts to back them up and everything. However, if the IRS does come in and take a look at it, now granted, IRS audit rate is low, but it's I always just kind of the importance of keeping that documentation. So anything that you are going to deduct or that you've got records for, just make sure you maintain that documentation so you can support the positions you take on your tax return. So again, as I mentioned, the tax proposal out there, the Build Back Better plan, back in at the end of 2021, the House passed it. There was no movement in the Senate. The capital gain rates were proposed to increase gift and estate taxes, and then they also took a look at potentially increasing the corporate and individual rates as well. Like I said, we haven't heard much as far as progressing on that. I don't anticipate we'll hear anything in the near term, but you know, that can always change. So that's kind of on hold at the moment. So again, summarizing our planning approach, make sure it's a balanced approach. So you're not just looking. You got to look out past the end of your nose and see the long term. What is our game plan and are we doing the right things to for the long term strategy of the company? Other things to consider. You know, we talked about the bank and the bonding companies, looking at your financials. So making sure the decisions you make from a tax planning or from a tax preparation standpoint don't impair your ability to meet your bank covenants or to meet bonding requirements. So you got to have that, again, balanced approach to manage taxes, but also to know you got to operate your business and you got to have those things be working together. So the last item we'll talk about is our exit strategies. As I mentioned previously, the entity structure that you have selected will impact how you're taxed when you decide, hey, it's time for me to move on. So we'll talk about a little bit of methods of transfer, what opportunities are out there, and then what can be done. So the tax implications when you're ready to sell your business, there's obviously lots of different ways that you can go about exiting a business. You can sell to your employees, you can sell to a third party, there's ESOPs that can be created, which is employee stock option plans. If you've got the right set of scenarios for that, right type of employment group. So that is basically a retirement plan that can buy your stock in the company. You can gift it. You can transfer it generationally to the next generation as a gift. There are limitations as far as how much of that, depending on the value of your company, what the tax implications of that. But most of the time, if you're selling your company to, say, a third party, an independent buyer, they're going to want to buy assets. And what I mean by that is they're going to want to buy all the assets and the goodwill inside your company and then create them into their own new entity. Most of the time, buyers don't want to buy stock. If you buy stock, all the, I guess, sins of the past come along with it, so to speak. So any liabilities or contingencies or anything like that comes with it. So most of the time, buyers will want to just buy the assets and the name and the processes in place and the goodwill that comes along with that and start fresh from those areas. So when you do that, so from a seller standpoint, selling stock is the most tax advantage way to do it because you get capital gain rates when you sell your stock. Selling your assets, you are everything that you've depreciated. So we talked about bonus depreciation. Depreciated all of our assets down, so that depreciation was using ordinary deductions, so not capital gain deductions. So when we sell those assets, the gains on those, the recapture of that depreciation is taxed at the regular tax rates. So you've got higher tax rates on that. So part of what you want to do in those items are, yeah, the allocation of the purchase price is extremely important to both sides. The buyer can, the more that's allocated to equipment, the more beneficial, the more they get to take that bonus depreciation. And you know, we may be seeing an uptick in buyers, we've seen quite a bit of activity in that front anyway, but with bonus depreciation being 100% the last year, so there may be some motivation towards the end of the year for buyers to want to get those sales in place and take that extra depreciation. Obviously the buyer wants equipment valued higher, goodwill lower, because the buyer can only depreciate goodwill over 15 years. On the flip side, the seller, as you're exiting your company, the amount that gets allocated to goodwill is taxed at capital gain rates and the equipment, like I mentioned, up to the point of that's been depreciated is going to be taxed at the regular tax rates, the ordinary rates, as they say. So structuring that deal and purchase price allocations is important from that standpoint. Now, if you've got a C corporation, you sell those assets, as I mentioned previously, when we were talking about entities, to get the money out of the C corporation, then again, you'll have to, after you pay the tax on the gain in the C corporation, then it will be a taxable dividend to get that money back out to you into your pocket. So again, that's the real advantage of the pass-through entities is this stage in the game, the exit strategies, where you pay the tax once and then you can liquidate the company and take the excess cash without paying that extra layer of tax. You know, the generational, the internal, the third party is what I kind of talked about there. Seller finance is an item where a lot of times we'll see that where you've got a good set of workers, a good set of employees, key employees that want to take over the company. They haven't built up enough equity in order to either pay cash or to even get bank financing for that. So you will see sometimes these be seller financed, and if it's also if it's generational, some of the next generation, you might carry a note personally on that. That will spread out your gains from partially. So the recapture portion you will still be taxed on right away. So if you do have a long term contract that you're selling those on. The importance is projecting out what the tax is going to be based on how the deal is structured. It can significantly impact your cash flow at closing and down the road from a taxable standpoint. One thing we'll see from time to time is the seller finance. Obviously, there's more risk involved with the seller financing. If those key employees do hit a rough stretch or aren't able to manage it on their own and maintain profitability, then the note is only as good as the company that's there. And so what can happen is you get the company back and it's not as strong of a company as it was when you sold it. But now you're back and you're trying to build it back to what it was. So just make sure you've got the right people in place and they're capable of paying off that debt when you do that. The valuation portion of that, so that can be tricky at times as well. I typically recommend you have a third party do a valuation on the company. It's that way you've got kind of that outside set of eyes looking at the numbers. Many times it's based on cash flow, but you also you've got lots of different things that they go into a valuation. Many times a small business owner, their biggest asset that they have most of the time is their company. So something they've grown from scratch, put their sweat equity into, build it up all this time. So that's really their biggest retirement asset is the value they've created in this company. And so it's important to make sure that you get the proper value for what you've created and able to earn that and have that be a valuable retirement asset. Now, obviously it's up to each individual whether they feel they want to maximize that value. A lot of times that's going to be by going to a outside or a third party or selling upstream. If it's more important to you to have the next, keep it in the family, have the next generation run it, or to if you've got great employees that have created this value along the way and to have them continue to run it, then that, those are all decisions that have to be made. So sometimes it's taking a lesser value in order to see the company continue on the way in the light that you'd like to see it taken go forward. So as with anything that we've talked about, planning ahead is the most important thing to maximize your value. So you want to make sure that it's set up for success after you exit. Obviously, if you're financing personally, if you're taking on a note to get paid off over time, then it's going to behoove you for that standpoint. But just having people in place so that regardless of whether you're selling to a third party or internally, having the company set up so when you take a step out, the company can still operate and be profitable. That's where you're going to maximize your value the most with that, because if the company is only as good as you running it, then the value is going to be decreased, and you either won't get your money if you sell it internally, or the third parties are going to see that this is tied completely to one person, and when that one person's gone, the value is not there. So setting those processes in place and setting people up for success upon your exit, that's one of the most important things that you can do. So to wrap things up, just a couple other notes. I'm sure you've heard on the news and elsewhere that the IRS has a significant backlog. So they're, we're seeing, you try to call and they basically, you get the message, we're too busy right now, try to call back later. You don't even get put on hold a lot of times. So they're backed up in processing paper returns. They got a lot of amended returns they're processing. So long story short, if you get notices, and you're getting those things, it's going to take some time to resolve. So I guess, unfortunately, patience is all we've got with that. Just a note on that as we continue to try to work through these things with the IRS. Their staffing is extremely low, and it definitely shows as we try to process through things. Again, plan for anticipated transactions. So if you know things are coming down the pipe, make sure you're planning for those things, and then strategize for your company, where you want to take it to. Things don't just happen. So the more you strategize and look out long term, the more successful you'll be.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.